She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And remember, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And trust me when I say one more time, we are going to give you lots to think about today. Let me say first that this show is sponsored in part by Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona, where their business is changing lives. And as you know, I totally believe they do change lives. And don't forget to think about Goodwill in your holiday shopping or shopping all year. It's become quite the trend. It's in, it's chic, and you will have great finds. You'll find great finds at Goodwill. Treasures abound. And as I said, thank you all of us for joining us today. I would first like to welcome our very special guest. His name is Eric Sinaway, and he is the author of a recently published and amazing book called Howard's Gift. It is a book of uncommon wisdom to inspire your life's work and, from my perspective, your life in the most global, a complete body, mind, spirit sense of the word, not just your work. And Eric is also the president in his spare time, besides being an author and I'm sure doing book tours, he's the president of Access Worldwide, the world's first partnership development company. I hope we're going to hear more about that. Eric, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm honored to be here.
Well, you can hear the excitement in my voice because you have a lot to share. So I'm going to not hurry through these announcements in honor of my other sponsors, but let's just say, don't forget to remember that I am a partner of the Dream Vision 7 radio network, where my shows can be heard every Monday and Tuesday at dreamvisions7radio.com. They air on Mondays and Tuesdays, both at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 12 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So there's now, Arizona is the only place that doesn't change time, so I have to make sure I say that. So right now, they're 2 hours ahead of us, but our shows are on that very big network, and we're proud to have them as a partner. And don't forget to join me every Saturday at noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. And remember that you can listen on your iPhone or your Droid. And if you can't listen live on Saturdays, all the podcasts from the shows live on my website for your listening pleasure. And we are thankful to all of you who are downloading those podcasts in record numbers. It's making the entire Mrs. Green team quite thrilled. Also, stay with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, and whatever the next social media monster they come up with next. Okay, another great shout out for a company that is led by a thought leader. She is a rabid animal lover, no pun intended. And of course, I am talking about EcoBella and their wonderful founder, Sally Malanga. Since we are so close to the holidays for this recording, and since I am pretty sure that people might be getting a little tired of me harping about healthy products for your body, about products that don't harm the environment, and about companies who are outstanding stewards of their own communities and of the planet. And EcoBella is a stellar performer on all of those measures. I'm going to keep it short because I warned Eric I have about 2 pages of questions, all of which we cannot possibly get to, and simply hope that you are inspired to act by this short shout out and that you will start reading labels on your products, you'll start learning about the companies that you're supporting, and that you'll check out www.ecobella2c's.com and put them to the test. I have no doubt they'll pass it, and I'm sure if you mention that Mrs. Green sent you, you will get a nice little 10% discount. They are sustainable business in action. So, Eric, I think that's the fastest I ever did it, because as I was prepping for the show this week, this is what I call a uber content rich show. So we have to get on with it. And I just want to say that this is the first, you are the first guest that I've ever had that who's what I would call a very out-of-the-box interpretation of sustainability on some level, and yet at the very core of it on another. Does that make sense to you?
It does, and I'd love to hear more.
Well, when our friend Andrea Foster, our mutual friend, who is another human dynamo, contacted me, you know, I had to do the research because I really do want people to know that I am about a global sustainable planet. And in my book that is ostensibly finished, but you have been there, done that. It's like, okay, I'm rewriting it again, more of it. It's like the biggest nightmare I ever took on. But your book is about, to me, sustainability from the inside out, which is where sustainability begins. It's not just about business. It's not just about tips to, you know, keep your connections. It's about taking a very important step, this time more than ever, to teach people about Howard's little injections of wisdom and to have them stay with us, because I can tell you one of them helped me in a situation last Sunday with a girlfriend who was just absolutely and positively going through an injection point that we'll talk about as we go on. So tell us a little bit about you and tell us a little bit about the book, and we'll intersperse those as we go throughout the show.
Sure, I'll dive in, and please direct the conversation wherever it is of most interest. You know, I'm an entrepreneur. It's
clearly
a gift and a curse. It's a gift and a curse. You know, I'm not an author. I guess I am an author, but that wasn't the intent, obviously. And I'd started a couple businesses. I've had sort of a non-traditional career path. And in 2005, I got a mid-career one-year master's degree at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. And when I was there, I was fortunate to meet and then befriend a longtime Harvard professor named Howard Stevenson. And Howard is a fascinating figure. He's the first in his family to go to college. Went to Stanford, got his MBA and his doctorate at Harvard Business School, where he then proceeded to teach for 40 years, a time during which he taught thousands and thousands of students, including, you know, George Bush, Mitt Romney, you know, a host of other well-known figures, obviously. And he became known as the father of entrepreneurship. He founded the entrepreneurship program at Harvard, and he coined the definition of the word itself. The definition used around the world is one that Howard created.
Talk about an icon. I mean, just saying that will make people want to read the book, but you help us know him. You help us know Howard and want us to be walking across campus with him and hanging on to his every word. So go on.
Well, thank you. What I said is obviously incredibly impressive. He also started a number of companies, made a great deal of money himself, and then got very interested in philanthropy, became a fundraiser, and then became the most successful fundraiser in the history of Harvard. He's raised over $600 million for initiatives in the arts, the sciences, medicine, student financial aid, became the national chairman of National Public Radio, the chairman of the board of Harvard Business Publishing. And with all of that said, he's, you know, like your idealized grandfather or fatherly figure. And I think many of us in our mind have, you know, sort of that wise person that we hope to meet and befriend in our lives. And for me, that was Howard. And so we developed this sort of very special relationship. And then I began to work at Harvard after I graduated the Kennedy School so that we could continue working together. And life was wonderful until in 2007, Howard woke up one day, and he didn't feel terribly well, so he did what you're supposed to do, which is he went to the doctor, and the doctor gave him a clean bill of health. He somehow didn't believe it, and so the next day, he went and he got a second opinion, even though his doctor's a world-class physician, and the second opinion checked him out, told him he couldn't find anything wrong with him. He thought he was fine, gave him a clean bill of health. A couple days later, Howard woke up, and he had a bit of shortness of breath. And so he went and he got a third opinion. That doctor told him he couldn't find anything wrong with him. He thought he was fine, gave him a clean bill of health, and sent him on his way. Exactly 2 weeks later, walking across the Harvard campus, Howard died. And he died by experiencing what's called unattended cardiac arrest, which some of your listeners may know is a type of heart attack. Except people survive heart attacks. Nobody survives unattended cardiac arrest. My friend Dr. Josh Silverman tells me it's less than a 1% survival rate. Your heart seizes up and you die. And so that is how the story is supposed to end, where Howard was 66 years old, at the height of his career, with family, friends, community, all those things that, that we value. And what then transpired was an inexplicable series of events that, that you could not make up. And it started
you
with the
fact... You could not make it up. I just have to say, like, I'm sitting on the edge of my chair, and when you explained this to some degree in your book, I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. This is a miracle. That's all. It's just plain simple, miracle, 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 all day long.
If anyone out there is a movie producer, there's a movie in here
somewhere. There is a movie in here. I will tell you from the bottom of my very authentic heart, there is a movie in here, gripping, like on the end of your seat. Three doctors, and he had the access to the best medical care in the world. You know, we make doctors to be gods, which isn't fair, but that's what happens. I mean, they missed it. So go ahead. I don't want to interrupt your flow because it's, but I'm like, I'm bursting to say, is everybody getting this? Are you like, you know, involved already?
Yeah, and the book only gives you a piece of the story, so I'll give your listeners the full story, which is Howard's heart stopped. He collapsed. He was technically dead before he hit the ground. And what transpired began with the fact that he fell outside of the only building on campus with a mobile defibrillator.
Oh.
A colleague of his saw him fall and ran inside to get the defibrillator. As she did, a second colleague, the head of campus operations, sprinted 200 yards across campus to his side and began performing CPR.
Unbelievable.
The defibrillator came and was administered. The guy who performed CPR was exhausted because CPR is strenuous.
Right.
He went back to his office. He sat down at his desk. He looked at his desk. On his desk was his mail. He opened his mail, and that day in his mail was a certification of completion of his CPR training from the week before.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I mean, there's so many injections of wisdom for all of us to take away from just this first 2 minutes.
Yeah, no, it gets crazy. So an ambulance came. It was one of two ambulances in the city of Boston that carried a specific clot-busting drug called TPA. TPA is not carried on ambulances. It's only administered bedside in hospitals. This was one of two in the entire city that happened to have it. The medic on duty had special advanced training to give a needle injection directly into Howard's heart, which he did as he lay lifelessly in the middle of the Harvard campus. They worked on him for 45 minutes to stabilize him. They put him in an ambulance, which went to a hospital 2 minutes away, where the head of cardiac surgery happened to be on duty. His heart had been stopped for 4 minutes. The man had been dead. They put three stents in, and they put him into a medically induced coma for 3.5 days. When they brought him out of the coma, the president of the hospital tells me the doctors were speechless that there was no cognitive damage. He was fine. And that the man had been dead for, they estimated, between 4 and 4.5 minutes, and that he had been fine. And so this was about 6 years ago. I heard about it. I threw up. I then went to see Howard after he came out of the coma, and it was very emotional, as you can imagine. And I asked him in this conversation if he had any regrets, and he said that he had not. That he obviously did not want to die, but that he had lived the life that he had wanted, and he, you know, of course, had made mistakes, but that he was really deeply satisfied with his term. And I thought at that moment, you know, I've been fortunate in my career and life to know lots of sort of successful, you know, wealthy people, and that very, very few, if any, could truly say they were satisfied in that circumstance, that if they had just died at 66. And so Howard, when he got out of the hospital, we began a series of conversations at his home. About that and about everything in life, family, friends, you know, faith, career, and I tape recorded these conversations. And in the first conversation, I said, you know, Howard, you died on me, man. What did you think? What did you think your kids were going to say at your funeral? And you know, and he cried, and I cried, and we just had this sort of remarkable set of discussions. And being a an entrepreneur and an idiot, I then started writing a book and didn't, as you referenced in the opening statements, didn't really realize what a black hole writing a book could become.
Oh, my gosh.
And now, to bring this terribly long story to an end, almost 6 years after we started, St. Martin's Press published the book on October 2nd. It's available in bookstores nationwide, Amazon.com. You know, I never set out to do this. This sort of is a very organic, authentic experience. The proceeds or portion of the proceeds of the book are going to the cardiac unit that saved his life and his name. And, you know, I really wrote the book for two reasons. One was very selfish, which is if your listeners, you know, if you have someone who you care about deeply, whether it is a parent, a sibling, a mentor, a professor, a friend, you just stop for a minute and imagine losing that person and how you feel. And then imagine miraculously getting a second bite at that apple and a second opportunity to continue that relationship. And that's what happened with me with Howard. And so selfishly, I really wanted to just capture Howard and our relationship. And then the second thing I wanted to do was to share him with the world. And really the purpose of this book is to share what I think is a remarkable human being and his uncommon wisdom, as we describe it, to help folks of all walks of life and all careers chart a life and a career of satisfaction and success.
And extremely unselfish of you. That's what I want to add, because you gave that journey that you have been taking with him to all of us and to people that I hope will choose to read the book. And, you know, I have only gotten emotional on my radio show twice. This is after 5 years, but my husband had a heart attack and almost didn't make it. And when you talk about, you know, our dear old friend John Seeley used to say, when God picks your number out of the hat, you're going, kid. And sometimes I think he takes a look at it and says, nah, you know, you got some more time. And we were in a very remote area in northern Arizona, hours from any good medical care. And I freaked. We did not have a defibrillator. And my husband was young. He is young. And I had the presence of mind, divinely guided, clearly, to go to the EMT station, the fire station, and it's a place called Greer, Arizona. And the fire captain was trained in I'm blanking. It's not CPR, but you know he's a response team. Yeah, he's a paramedic. Thank you. And he tore James's shirt open and started doing what saved his life. And we went to the little town outside of Greer, very little town, and there was a helicopter waiting to take a woman who had broken her hip. And the doctor said, heart attack trumps broken hip. We're sorry for that lady. And within about an hour and a half, he was in one of the best hospitals in Southern Arizona. So there you go. I had to share that because
you are
right.
Yeah, you dodged a bullet. That's quite a story.
And it was my husband of, you know, at the time, 35 years. So your point, I want to reemphasize for everyone, let's not hope that it has to take a catastrophic event for you to read something like Howard's Way. It's not a book that you read and put away and say, oh, that was great. It's a book that you put yellow stickies on. It's a book that you underline. It's a book that you pull out when you need a little injection of wisdom. So let's segue to that. And please don't ever apologize for that introduction. It wasn't too long. And from where I was sitting as a very overactive ADD adult, it was perfect. And I hung on your every word. So can we talk about one specific in the book? Because I referred to how it came into my life and being able to apply it last Sunday. And I thought, this is what Eric wrote about in Howard's Way. And it's when you talk about Michelle, who was going to possibly get laid off, and her reaction, and this is an inflection point of change. I think that's what Howard called it, and the spin that he put on what you can do if it's happening to you, and it's happening to millions of people at this point. There are still layoffs. There are still reorganizations, and what an opportunity for people that are listening about this kind of gift to change this inflection point into something very different from, you know, kind of being a victim.
Sure. Yeah, one of the things we've sort of thought about with the book is, you know, there's a lot of public discourse right now about the unemployed. And of course, there should be. That's a critically important issue. But we do think there is an untold story of the Great Recession. And we think that untold story is about what we're calling the silent victims of the Great Recession. And those are people, as you describe, who do have jobs, but whose careers may have gone in different directions than they had dreamed of,
right,
whose aspirations may have been stunted, whose progress may have been thwarted, and who are still not satisfied and fulfilled in their career and therefore their life. And indeed, they're victims too, even though they may still have a job. And so one of the things that Howard counsels in the example you give, and it's applicable to all of us really, is to both recognize and seize what we call inflection points. And inflection points are what Andy Grove, the founder and former CEO of Intel, describes as something that, quote-unquote, fundamentally changes the way you think or act. It's not a small change. It's something that fundamentally changes the way you think or act.
Major shift. Major shift.
Major shift. And it's what Howard's observed over decades is how many people don't even recognize that there's an inflection point, let alone seize it and be thoughtful about how you act upon it. And so the chapter that you're referring to is applicable to a broad range of folks, which is, you know, if your work situation is not fulfilling, it may be what we're calling a silent inflection point, which is
okay,
an opportunity.
Eric, we have to take a short break. Let's
sure.
go back with that when we come back, and we want to talk a little bit more, and including, is the juice worth the squeeze? Please stay here with me. Eric Sinoway, author of the book Howard's Gift.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Can you predict the future? The reality is we can't, but we can be ready for it. Funded by the National Science Foundation, researchers at the University of Arizona are working on a $3 million project to study the monsoon and learn about our changing desert weather, climate, and ecology. Such knowledge will help guide us to a more sustainable future, not just for our desert, but for the world. Now that's thinking ahead. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. My brother, Jim. When Jim was just 6 weeks old, he had a stroke. He had to rewire his brain to do most things we all take for granted. Thanks to Goodwill, Jim has a job and a sense of purpose. You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill is the best thing that ever happened to Jim. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I venture to say, if you are not thinking today, you must be sleeping, because Eric Sinoue, our guest, is the author of a recently published book, an amazing book that is a gift, and it's called Howard's Gift. He is also the one of the founders, president of Access Worldwide, the first partnership development company ever. And Eric, we're going to have you back so you can do a whole show on part your company, because I went down that rabbit hole of reading all about it. And I, of course, believe in developing partnerships. It's the new paradigm of thinking. So we'll get that somewhere in 2013. But let's go back to the book. And you were talking about injection points. And I had asked you about Michelle in case somebody just turned in. So give us a good lead in for picking up where we left off.
Sure. The topic was recognizing and seizing what we call inflection points in the book. And inflection points are moments where you have an opportunity to pivot from the path down which you're currently traveling and head in a totally different direction. And Howard counsels, first recognizing inflection points, and then second, not becoming, quote-unquote, victims of them,
right,
but leveraging them and seeing them as opportunities to reevaluate. And so many of us spend so much time, effort, and energy on, going down a particular path. Just think about yourself and perhaps speeding up on the path, moving obstacles out of our way on the path, perhaps even enjoying our trek down the path. But rarely do we stop and say, is this the right path? And what Howard counsels is that inflection points are those rare opportunities where we have the opportunity to do so.
And do you think it's, I read that and reread that and reread that, and I think that I am blessed with having had inflection points in my life. Is it in our DNA to just kind of go to work and do what the boss says? Or do you really feel and see and observe massive shifts in that paradigm to the new one of, I have control of my life, I'm not a silent victim, and I'm going forth to create my own reality? I mean, I had great parents, and they said, go to work even if you're sick. My dad worked like a dog in New York City, and there was a work ethic that I think was very good, but I think you can segue that to what you're talking about, which is it can be very good, but you are in control. You are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul.
Yeah, one of the things that we advocate with the book is sort of free your inner entrepreneur. And
love
just free your inner entrepreneur. And, one of Howard's, claims to fame, if you will, is he defined the term entrepreneurship, and his definition of entrepreneurship is the following, which is the pursuit of opportunity beyond the resources you currently control.
Love it. Say it again.
Yeah, no, I'll say it again, but before I do, before he really changed the world's idea about entrepreneurship, the term meant it's some likely crazy person who starts his or her own company.
Right.
That's sort of an entrepreneur. And when Howard really looked at it, he said that's not what it is. What it is someone who pursues opportunity beyond the resources they currently control. And so what it is it's stretching, it's going for more, it's trying to achieve something beyond what you realistically can currently do. And if you believe that definition, then an entrepreneur, of course, can be someone who starts a company, but it also can be an employee within a company, it can be a teacher, it can be a nonprofit executive, it can be anybody. And as you reference, it is really a mindset and approach. And part of that certainly is grabbing control of your own life and pursuing what it is that, meets your highest aspirations and dreams, regardless of the resources that you currently control.
And it's not synonymous with starting your own business. And I like that, because that puts a lot of fear into people. And it kind of makes me laugh, because just my going from Clear Channel to my own internet radio station, talk about a stretch, and I felt like I was jumping off the cliff without a parachute, but I knew that the parachute would not only open, but I would grab one, find one, and put it on before I crashed, and I'm still going. So it's like that. Maybe that's why it was such an affirmation and inspiration for me. Can you talk a little bit about one of my favorite chapters, of which there are many? maybe it's because it's so clever, but is the juice worth the squeeze? And the quote is it worth squeezing a gallon of fresh grapefruit juice if you really want a glass of orange juice? Now, if that doesn't make people want to read the book, they're just not our demographic. So talk us a little about that inflection point.
Sure. The essence of this chapter can be summed up in a couple points. The first is asking why. And Howard has a great quote, which is, be explicit about your bets. And it's fascinating that we as humans, momentum, just life has a certain momentum. And so you just do things. But often you stop and think, why am I doing this? I mean, just realistically, like, why am I doing this? And so his you know, comment about be explicit about your bets in your very personal example about moving from a traditional career perhaps to being an entrepreneur, you know, I am going to do this because I'm betting if I do this, I will be more fulfilled, I will contribute to the world, I will perhaps make more money, I will have control of whatever it is, you're being explicit about why you're doing it. And by first, when you're explicit, you can then evaluate, well, what will it take to do that? And sort of how hard is that squeeze to get the juice that I'm betting will come out of it? And at the end of the day, you know, is that squeeze, which is going to require something, worth the juice?
Right, right.
And so, you know, we say that all the time in my business even, which is you can make more money, but it has a cost. And that cost could be time away from our families. It could be, you know, something. It could be doing something unethical. I mean, you could always get more money, but sort of is the juice, that more money, worth whatever the squeeze is that it would take at that time? And I think that applies to people's family lives as well. You know, when you think about things, you know, I'm going to go play golf with the buddies. Well, okay, you know, I may not be able to spend time with my kids. Well, you know, what is the juice and the squeeze of, you know, the squeeze with my friends is, you know, 3 hours. That's what it's going to take. The juice is some fun with my friends. You know, is that worth it? And then is it worth it in comparison to something else that I could have been doing?
Really, really, really important about making choices. And especially, it's very serendipitous to me about these holiday times. There was a point in my life where I just said yes to every holiday party. And now I do consciously stop and say, is this really a place I want to spend 3 hours during this time? And that's it's what I mean about the relevance of this book, about those stopping points, take a deep breath, or would I rather stay home and watch a movie with my husband because I've been really busy? So this is, to me, just really reflective of, I love it, is the juice worth the squeeze? Did you make that up? I didn't see where Howard actually said that. Was that your piece of humor in there, because I loved it.
Yeah, I honestly, I don't know. We've gotten so sort of intertwisted, Howard and
right,
I, over
right.
all the years, but
it's kind of like symbiotic. Yeah, really.
Exactly.
We can ask Howard. Just ask Howard.
Exactly.
Okay, and before we have to go to another break, there's time to talk about another chapter, which you will certainly understand why I love, about it's about finding your catalyst. And it's, I think it's chapter 9, and you tell a story that touched me about Rachel Jacobson and the organization that she started. Because when you talk about partnerships, look what they're doing. Look what that group is doing. And it's really important because of so many emerging women leaders and women entrepreneurs and women thought leaders in this exciting paradigm shift I think we're living through.
Absolutely. We really, one of sort of the philosophies is that, you know, nobody succeeds alone. And we believe that from a business perspective, which is the basis of Access Worldwide, my company, but then from a very individual perspective, you know, I had a blog on Harvard Business Review recently that sort of got a bunch of attention and some criticism, which was, it started with, you're probably not very good at most things.
Right.
The reality is, you might be good at a lot of things, but very good. Most of us are not very good, which means better than others, at more than just a couple things. And so when we think about our lives and our careers, in the book, we identified two ways to create catalysts. One is through the creation of, if you will, a support group. We call it your individual board of directors, or your IBOD, and we can talk about that. And then the second is through identifying and proactively securing what we call legacy and career mentors. And the idea in its simplest form is that, you know, it takes a village or it takes a team to achieve the both personal and professional goals that one has for him or herself. And that trying to do that alone is probably not the most effective approach.
And probably not done. Some people just think they do it, but it's really not done. I mean, it does take a team to create great success, in my opinion. So go on. This is a great chapter.
Yeah, and it's not just organizational. I mean, everyone talks about teams organizationally, but
right,
we sort of
right.
brought it down to an individual, and you touched on it earlier. With your statement about taking control of your life and your career personally. And so, you know, the reality is I'm not very good at most things, okay? So, you know, I'm okay at finance, but that is not an area that I excel at better than. So, you know, I've got a guy who, you know, has his PhD in economics from MIT and Yale, and he is my finance guy, and I've purposely, he's a colleague, he's a member of my IBOD, and I've explicitly said to him, you know, hey, can I call upon you when I need sort of a trusted opinion for things related to finance? Because you're very good in that area.
Right.
You know, I've got a guy who is an entrepreneur who I worked for years ago, Chip Conley, who you may know, is a very well-known guy. He founded a company called Joie de Vivre in San Francisco. And he's been down the road I'm traveling. He's 10 or 15 years older than I am. He's an entrepreneur in a service business. We share a lot of the same values and some of the same background. And, you know, when I come across an issue I don't know how to handle, I can call upon Chip.
Right, right.
And, you know, what I've done is assemble these folks proactively, and they're not necessarily just my friends. They're people who expect to be called upon because they know what it is that I'm trying to do, and they've sort of agreed to help and to lend some of their time and their expertise.
In the true Seth Godin word, they're part of your tribe. I mean, I love that word.
They're part of our tribe.
They're part of your tribe.
Yeah, and one of them's the 85-year-old Henry Rozovsky, who's an iconic former dean at Harvard. And, you know, Henry has seen more of the world, and you know, he just has a wisdom and a perspective that, you know, you want to be able to call upon, and it's sort of doing the thinking up front, saying, as I go forward in my life and my career, I foresee that I will need that tribe and those other members to help me, as opposed to being reactive and saying, oh, darn, I have a problem. Who do I call? And that's sort of the function that the IBOD can play in one's life.
And the thing that I want to ask, which is not in my list of very long questions, is you are young and you have these incredible, I call them Yodas, your wise men and women in your life, and it can be any age. Are you now serving that role for people? Are you the mentor? I would be very shocked if you said no. I would be only surprised if you didn't really see yourself as that. But are you finding it interesting and fun? Because you are one of those people that I would like to have your cell phone number now and say, you know, well, what would Eric say? And I'm older than you are.
Listen, I'm flattered by the sentiment, so thank you. It is interesting, and it may be interesting for these folks too. There are some among us who are terribly narcissistic, and let's remove those because those are the outliers.
Right, but and they're probably not listening, or they know more, maybe. So it's okay.
Exactly, they already know all we're talking about. But for most of us, I think it is a process to understand and accept that you have some knowledge that someone else might value.
And have a responsibility to share it. That's what happens when they turn to me. It's like, why are they asking me? Oh, I am full of certain kinds of wisdom. So step into that.
No, and that's right. I think you just hit it both, and I would almost just disaggregate it, which is, why are they asking me? I think is a common response.
Yes.
And in response to your question, it takes a little while. When they started asking me, I'm like, what do I know? Why are you asking me? I still... You know, and I think, you know, over time you come to recognize that, as you say, humbly, perhaps there is some value to the experience and perspective that I can bring to those who may not yet have it. And then the second question is, you know, what responsibility do I have to do that? And for most of us, I think we do feel some responsibility, particularly if people have done it for us.
And when you take the ego out of it, it becomes easier. And I know that if I called you and you didn't know, you could just call Howard. So we got it all covered.
Yeah,
just a little injection of humor right there. Okay.
No, I'm very clear on who I am and who Howard is, and I'm comfortable with the difference between those two.
But you did kind of morph into this one wonderful vessel of wisdom, so to speak. Okay, we are going to have to take another break in about 2 minutes, but some of the things I'd like to cover and to alert our listeners and alert you, I really would like to spend a little time talking about access worldwide, because it is a huge part of the new paradigm and, to me, an integral part of what you did with writing this book and what you're doing every day. And then maybe talk about some of the who is the audience for this book? You know, that was on the list of questions that someone on your team put away. But who isn't this for? I want my 24-year-old daughter to read it. My 12-year-old granddaughter is almost ready to read it because you know about how smart kids are these days. And I'm 62 and want to share this book with my friends and have been already. So to me, the demographic question is, if you're a consciously living human being, get on the internet and get this book from Eric Sinoway. So are those some good things to lead into the last segment about, Eric?
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
And we want to know how Howard is today and what he thinks of the book. So you're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. We're having a fun, lively, interesting discussion, blessed discussion with Eric Sinoway. He's the president of Access Worldwide and the author of the book, Howard's Gift. Please stay here with me. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some exciting news. The all-new 2013 Honda Accord is here. It's got a new level of sophistication. It's an efficiency expert, and when you drive one, you can discover how EcoAssist can help you increase your fuel efficiency. For a record 26th time, the Honda Accord has been named to Car and Driver's esteemed 10 Best list. To check them out, visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street. They have a great selection of 2013 Accords in stock right now.
Can academic research really save the planet? This year, the University of Arizona took full ownership of Biosphere 2. With 5 ecosystems enclosed in over 7 million cubic feet of sealed glass, Biosphere 2 is a premier facility for environmental research, where the top minds in the world will come together to address some of humanity's greatest challenges, such as climate change. Now that's using your brains. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Did you know that even a donated doorknob can help Habitat for Humanity? Habitat's Habastore accepts donated items like furniture, building materials, and appliances. Donations come from commercial builders, malls, restaurants, hotels, and individuals like you. Then, items are bought by bargain hunters who come across the very things they are looking for, just like the right doorknob. The best part is that Habastore sales generate funds for building homes. Call 520-889-7200 or visit habitattucson.org.
We'll
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I think that maybe I am sounding a little bit over the top, enthusiastically goofy about this interview. And I don't apologize for that, because that's how I felt about reading this book and about getting Eric on as a guest. We are interviewing Eric Sinaway. I am interviewing Eric Sinaway, who's the president of Access Worldwide, and who's one claim to fame will be the author of Howard's Gift, and it is a gift indeed. So again, Eric, thank you. And thanks to our friend Andrea Foster for so enthusiastically connecting us. I love her, and she's another amazing human being.
Absolutely. I'm going to see her next week in Boston.
I am so jealous. And trust me when I say, in 2013, you and I will have breakfast or lunch, because I am a Jersey girl and I'm coming back to New York City. I'm having an acute New York City withdrawal, and have developed many friendships since Mrs. Green. I have many old ones, but a lot. So let's go back to tell us a little bit, as much as you want, actually, because it's my show and I get to say, and you can do what you want, but your company is to me almost the epitome of what I believe our new paradigm being formed is all about. It is indeed what I do on a much smaller scale at this point. I don't have sponsors or advertisers. I haven't from the beginning. I have partners, and we develop what Mrs. Green's World is going to do in that partnership, and vice versa. So talk about your vision and the whole concept of building partnerships with your clients.
Sure. Access Worldwide is what we call the world's first partnership development company, which we believe is sort of a burgeoning business function. And if you sort of look at the chronology of business, you know, first there was a function called sales. And sales entailed a company or an individual selling a specific product or service to a specific audience. It was a known product and a known audience. Then, you know, someone invented the concept of business development. You know, you go back 30, 40, 50 years, business development didn't exist. It was just called sales. But business development came along, and the idea there was you're selling, you know, a known product to an unknown audience. You know what you've got, and you're trying to find someone who wants it. And we think that the next evolution of business is really this function called partnership development. And in partnership development, you are trying to identify and marry two or more organizations that can together identify the products or services and the opportunity that they can create that will be mutually beneficial. And so we've come up with this sort of concept and theory. The company works with dozens of the world's leading brands. And we do two very simple things. We create what we call inspired ideas. And my business partner, Kirk Posmentor, is a creative genius. We hire creative people, and we like to think that we've got some decent ideas. And we connect extraordinary brands and people. And we're surrounded by, you know, really extraordinary individuals and organizations. And therefore, we're able to look at two or more of them and say, hey, what if, you know, you paired A with Q? That would work in a really interesting way to create value for both of them and advance both of their business objectives. And so, as you said in one of your comments, you know, we've sort of we both came out of corporate America probably 10 years ago. We are blessed and fortunate to be in control of our own destiny and lives, and we've created something that certainly embraces a lot of the cultural aspects we talked about in Howard's Gift, and it's a fascinating experience. Not without fear, as you described. I think any small business today, but hopefully
I don't know. That's kind of the fun of it. If you're not fearful, which to me is the same as excitement, you're probably bored or not really stepping into that great big spot. And I know this is overused, but it's show up as you because everybody else is taken, and you do it so well. And I have to say, so humbly, because you're all that, and you've got it going on, as my kids would say. So I appreciate your humility. So let me be the one to embarrass you by the greatness that you bring by showing up as you. And I mean that. I don't say anything on this radio show or in my life that I don't mean. So thanks for showing up in my life. Okay. Do we really cover easily and quickly how people can get the book, because I have a tendency, we'll rush to the end of the show and I'll get off and say, oh my goodness, we never told people how to easily get the book. Amazon.com, is that the best way? Should they go to the website? What's your advice to our listeners on that?
Sure. Well, first, thanks for asking the question. The book is available at Barnes & Noble nationwide, Amazon.com. We believe it's a special book about a special man. As I said at the outset, a large portion of the proceeds are going to support good work at a hospital to help cardiac patients. We appreciate reviews online at Amazon.com, particularly if people like the book. If they
so you
them,
think
we
I should write one?
That would be terrific.
I think I
that
should write
terrific.
One.
You can get the book there. We've heard it's a great sort of holiday gift. It's a great, new year, new you book. And we're told if you liked Tuesdays with Maury.
Yes, I was going to bring that up. Great analogy.
Yeah, and we'd like to think, we're told if you like that, you'll love this. This has got a lot of the same heart, a lot of the same emotion, similar sort of construct. Hopefully this has got a little bit more head, if you will, and a little bit more sort of substance and actionable things that will empower the reader and enable him or her to take control of their life and career and become all that they aspire.
And, a perspective that I want to add is that in doing research, one of the reasons that I ask the questions is because in the new way of thinking, especially with the younger generation, the lecture series is over. The expert, forget it. What you do in your book successfully, and I want to really emphasize this for people that are going to buy the book because I know they will, is what you do with Howard. You have us walking with you on the campus. You are engaging us in the conversation. There's no feel, touch, hint of lecturing. I know it all. Just ask me. Howard, I don't think, is capable of that. He just is. And he's a wise man. He's like, he's like a Yoda. I
call him Yoda. Looks like Yoda.
He is like a Yoda. And that is like one of the highest compliments I can give someone. So the format of the book is like Tuesdays with Maury, only better in that I'm there and I want to like tap on the shoulder and say, yeah, but could you repeat that part because I didn't get it and I can go back and read it. So, really major, major praise for that. And I want to go now and talk a little bit selfishly about the challenge of writing, publishing, and then marketing the book. Not only did you do it, you have an international corporation, and I really am finding it challenging to find the time or make the time to do the rewrites on my book so that it can get published. And then that's where the real work begins. I talked to, I think, Jackie on your staff when we were arranging the show, and it's the days of like the publisher doing all the work, not happening, folks. So tell us a little bit about that creative process and actually getting it done and not being one of the millions of people who say, I'm going to write a book someday. You did it, Eric.
Yeah, no, thank you. I did it. It just cost me my hair and 5 years of my life, but I did do it.
Oh, my gosh.
Is the juice worth the squeeze?
That makes
is
me the, feel better. Yeah, the juice yeah, worth the squeeze.
The juice. The verdict is still out, but no, I'm just kidding. The juice was worth the squeeze, but there was one hell of a squeeze. So to answer your question, it is much naivety is bliss, because if I knew then what I knew now, I might not start. I spent three years, trying to write this book myself. I probably would have quit a dozen times, but I committed to a man that I
really
loved that I was going to do it, and
yeah.
It was it's really hard, much harder than I thought, really hard. And then for me, the story is not a secret, which was, after 3 years, I finally got smart and I drafted a professional writer, a former colleague of mine, a guy named Merrill Meadow, who works at Harvard, who writes for Harvard, who is a prince among men, and downloaded on him, thousands of pages of my work, hundreds of hours of tapes, and then the two of us spent the next 2 years really reformulating it and him helping me craft it into the book that it is today. It's an interesting question, having really just gone through the experience, there's a lot of people self-publishing, and that is certainly a viable path, and whether I would do that in the future or not, I don't know. In this particular case, we got very lucky. We through happenstance, met in a very significant agent who Fell in love with the story, fell in love with Howard, fell in love with the couple chapters we had written at that point. And we were fortunate that St. Martin's Press bought it when he auctioned it.
Happenstance, all part of a bigger plan that we get to be pawns on the chessboard. I mean, it's just really, it was so meant to be for the gift that it brings. So yeah, it all worked. It all worked for the greater good.
Well, we hope so. I hope that, you know, my only hope is that the book spreads far and wide so that as many people as possible can benefit from Howard's wisdom indirectly, the way that I've been so fortunate and blessed to do directly.
I know this sounds a little bit weird, but what I think is people are hungry for this book. They need this book. They might not know it, but I know so many people. I mean, look what I do. I'm a public persona. I do public speaking. I interview people from all over the country. I do massive amounts of research. I am very present as a part of my family, which is multi-generational, and I listen. It's you know, when you talk about gifts, one of mine, believe it or not, in addition to loving to talk a lot, is being very present when I listen. So I listened to what the book had to share, and people need it. I needed it. I'm an entrepreneur. I have started, you know, one of my companies went public, and there are so many things in it that I needed to be either reminded of, that I had never thought about it that way. So I am not one of your agents, and I'm not an affiliate. I am just a person that has credibility with my audience, and I say it sincerely from what I call my open green heart, that take the time to get this book. And I don't heartily endorse things this long usually on the show, but to me it's a healing book, it's a helpful book, it's a thoughtful book. And you know what? It's not a heavy book in the sense of burdensome. It's a heavy book in terms of going deeper and looking into what it is going on in your life, but it's certainly one that I celebrated reading. So there you go for my endorsement. You think I can write that up on the website? I'm going to try. Containing what I write will be the biggest challenge.
I don't even know how to respond with that other than to express my appreciation. I'm thrilled and humbled that the book touched you in the way that you describe, and you know, hope it has a similar effect on others.
Well, and you have a great team also helping to do it. It's so easy to call your office, and your front door is a welcoming one. And I said that to you off air when I was checking the line. So kudos to you for creating that corporate culture. And is it, let's end on the note, companies should not reward results. I think that that's really pejorative. So explain that in the last couple of minutes that we have.
Yeah, this is a classic Howardism, as I call it, which I just love.
I love it too.
Do not reward results, which is the most counterintuitive thing you've ever heard. We're all taught sort of growing up in you know, reward results. So Howard says, you know, if you really think about it, what is that? You know, results equals performance plus luck. Results equals performance plus luck. And if you really think about it, you know, particularly as you age and have some experience in the world, it's you can't deny the fact that luck plays a role. And if you think about the folks at the height of the real estate market, some of those realtors might have been terrific. Some of them may have just gotten very lucky and houses were flying off the shelf and they did extremely well. You know, someone doing the exact same function with the exact same skill in a different market today is unlucky.
Right.
And so by rewarding results, you're invariably rewarding luck. What Howard says is, you know, you don't want to reward results. You want to reward performance. Performance equals skill plus effort.
So different.
Both of those can be controlled. Skill plus effort can be controlled. Your results may or may not be great because it depends on the luck you've got. But what you really want to reward is performance. And he tells a great story about a friend and colleague of his who, you know, gave a huge bonus to an executive whose division lost $50 million. And he said, you know what? The division would have lost more without the guy. And it was bad luck. You know, his performance was outstanding. And I think that's a really important thing is, you know, as managers or leaders or entrepreneurs, even to think about the difference between results and performance.
And, you know, that is just, I mean, there's so many things that strike chords within me. And I don't, to me, this is not a political conversation at all, but about, I read a lot more about, I call it Solara. So, you know, the big debacle and everything held up. Eric, a lot of that was luck and timing in the market and the switch to thin film photovoltaics. And it was really bad luck. I mean, have the conversation about other parts maybe of bad decisions, but there are many of those where it was really bad luck and timing in the market. So it's another one that I just agree with. Okay, we have 1 minute left, and I just want to spend that minute thanking you, reminding our guests again to visit Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, to get a copy of Eric Sinoway's book, Howard's Gift, and the subtitle of it is An Uncommon Wisdom to Inspire Your Life's Work, and that is the work in the broadest interpretation. Eric, thank you for writing the book, for sharing Howard's wisdom with us, and please tell Howard that Mrs. Green sends her very best.
I will be sure to do it. I'll see him next week, and in the interim, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, make it a great green day, everybody. Thank you for being a part of Mrs. Green's world, and be here with us next week.